If I just believe it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar. I see me running through that open door. I believe I can fly. I believe I can fly. I believe I can fly.
This used to be such a great song and by such a great artist. And then what happened? Things changed. And if you were a fan of Space Jam like I was, then you would definitely have this in your arsenal of cassette tapes that are now misplaced or in the garbage. If you're not familiar with R. Kelly's history, he's an American R&B singer best known for his hits I Believe I Can Fly and Bump and Grind. The son of a singer, Kelly had always been fond of music. He first began to sing when he was 8 years old. As the years went by, he soon found himself street performing in his native Chicago town as a teen. Eventually, the aspiring musician formed a singing group with a few friends known as the MGM. Although short-lived, they released a single in 1990 before disbanding shortly afterwards. The following year, Kelly teamed up with a new band called Public Announcement, and together they signed a record recording deal with Jive Records in 1991. Not long afterwards, the artist released his debut album, Born Into the 90s, in the winter of 1992. So what happened to R. Kelly that has got him in the news and all these allegations against him and just... I mean, no one really cares for the guy anymore, it seems like. And did you know he had a Christmas album coming out? I didn't. Anyways, there's a new show on Lifetime called Surviving Kelly, or Kelly, and called Survivor Speak Out. And you can find that on Lifetime. So back in 2002, there was a sex tape that emerged showing Kelly engaging in sexual intercourse and urinating on an underage girl. Shortly after the tape leaked, police raided his home in Davenport, Florida, and found 12 images on a digital camera depicting Kelly involved in a sexual conduct with a female minor. Stephanie Sparkle Edwards, a former backup singer for Kelly and the aunt of the unnamed underage girl in the sex tape, introduced Kelly to the alleged victim, a meeting that still haunts her. According to an emotional clip from the documentary, "I should never have introduced her to him," she says in the clip, adding of the sex tape, "I'd hear things, but to see it visually, and she was so young, it fucked me up." Sparkle had introduced her niece to Kelly when she was 12 years old, and the alleged sex tape was recorded 2 years later. When her niece was 14, she said she began to fear that the relationship was getting out of control once she found out her niece was going to his home and studio alone. Once the tape surfaced in 2002, Sparkle didn't hesitate to go to the police and name both Kelly and her niece in the video. To this day, the young girl in the tape has not been identified publicly, although the girl's best friend from childhood, Sima Jamison, I totally butchered that, did testify against Kelly during this trial, who recognized her friend in the tapes and identified Kelly as the man in the video. According to a 2008 article by CBS News, Jamison was put on the stand to testify. She said she and the alleged victim were best friends for about 10 years until their junior year in high school, and that she recognized her friend as the one in the tape. When prosecutors asked Jamison if she recognized the man in the tape, she pointed to Kelly. She told the jury that she and the victim visited Kelly several times at his recording studio and a basketball court when they were just 12 years old. According to CBS, the victim first introduced Jamison to Kelly as her godfather and claimed Kelly used to give her friend cash gifts of no less than $100 and no more than $500. She said the two also visited the home where authorities say the sex tape was filmed between January 1, 1998 and November 1, 2000. Jamison said her friend never mentioned a sexual relationship with the star, although Jamison still identified her as the young girl on the tape. So this is just going to show that there's some issues that happen with certain people where they, you know, when you're attracted to someone younger, like that, when they're way not even at the age of appropriation or reason to be able to acknowledge or consent to sexual things, It's kind of what's known as like not being able to be mature mentally mature. And it causes you to want to, I guess, experience where you first started learning or familiarizing yourself with porn, with, you know, other sex and that kind of thing, where you start becoming attracted to these things. And if you never grow up and mature yourself, you know, if you never are given that opportunity to fully develop and all that kind of stuff and mentally, then you tend to still be perverted and go for the minors. And that's a big issue. It's not a I'm sure it's not an easy thing to deal with being R. Kelly. Now, that doesn't mean that we give him sympathy for the act at all. It's not at all what it means. But from a position of psychology and mental health and everything, this is something that, you know, is messing up his life and his career and everything about it. Again, he still made the choice. He could, you know, he still knows right from wrong in these cases. That's not the issue. What the issue is that's what his arousal system is sparked up by. And that's where the issue lies. That's where something wasn't connecting right or was connecting differently than most other people. And that, I don't know, I'm not saying it's developmental. I'm not saying it's because of his childhood or upbringing. I'm saying that something somewhere in his brain, something was affecting it. Now, I knew of a story and I did this for class, but basically there was a guy that had pedophilia tendencies. He had a tumor in his brain, and once a tumor was removed, he was then cured of his pedophilia. He literally had no desire for younger children or anything. But when the tumor came back in the same location, that so did the pedophilia. So there's something in the brain that causes us to want to do or decide or think certain things in certain ways. And it could be the prefrontal lobe. It could be the lateral medial lobe. It could be the dorsal lateral, or I think it's ventral medial. I think I said that wrong. These things translate information in our desires and impulses and arousal system. And then our chemical responses react. And then now we're like being rushed with dopamine, and that's what makes us feel good. That's what makes us attracted to these things. That's why, you know, lesbians can be lesbians and gays can be gays, because it's a chemical process that causes the arousal system. It's not a choice. It's not, you know, anything like that. If you're aroused by something, it's because you are responding that way to stimuli, if that makes sense. It should make the most sense. Actually, you can look it up, and there's a lot of articles out there on this very topic. There's just much that we don't know in the general public. And when you don't know much, we all kind of go, how the hell can they do this? It's so far out there. It doesn't make sense. And our minds don't go there. That's why. All right, we just don't have the capacity to go to these dark levels or to these very irregular, abnormal things. So I have a clip today from CBS. And it is the interview that took place in an interview with Gail King, and from CBS This Morning, the co-host Gail King. It's called "R. Kelly Breaks His Silence on Sex Abuse Claims. I'm Fighting for My Fucking Life." This is on YouTube, and I haven't listened to this yet, so we're both going to be listening to this for the first time, and I'm going to give you my opinion and my views and insights as we go along. If you have any information or anything that you would opinions that you would like to share, please let me know in the comments. I would greatly like to hear them.
To CBS This Morning. We're going to begin with your big explosive interview with R. Kelly. Wow.
He had a lot to get off his chest, Nora. Right. He actually said he welcomed the opportunity to speak. Right. And boy, did we let him speak.
And everybody has switched their channels and turned on to us to see it this morning.
We let him speak.
So let's get right to it, because R. Kelly is breaking his silence about the sexual abuse charges that landed him in jail last month. The embattled R&B singer spoke with Gail for nearly 80 minutes yesterday. It is an interview that you will see only on CBS This Morning. And he says all the women now accusing him of physical and sexual abuse, he says all of them are lying.
That's what he says. Chicago prosecutors have charged Kelly with 10 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Authorities say three of the four alleged victims were underage when the suspected crimes happened. Now, Kelly has pleaded not guilty. Sources tell CBS News federal and state authorities in at least two states, New York and Illinois, are now investigating a variety of allegations. The singer, as you know, has faced intense scrutiny for more than a decade now. It was reignited in January after the Lifetime docuseries Surviving R. Kelly featured interviews with seven accusers and former members of his inner circle. They all say that Kelly preys on vulnerable women and young girls. I am surprised that you agreed to do it. Why are you sitting down with us today?
I'm very tired of all of the lies. I've been hearing things and, you know, and seeing things on the blogs. And, you know, I'm just tired.
What are the lies that you're hearing that disturb you most?
Oh, my God. All of them. Got little girls trapped in the basement, helicopters over my house, trying to rescue someone that doesn't need rescuing because they're not in my house, handcuffing people, starving people. I have a harem, a cult. Mm-hmm. I don't even really know what a cult is, but I know I don't have one, you know.
Have you done anything that you regret? Have you done anything wrong?
Lots of things wrong when it comes to women that I apologize, but I apologize in those relationships at the time I was in the relationships.
Have you broken any laws when it comes to women?
Absolutely not.
The six-part series interviewed 50 people, family members, your former tour manager, numerous women who all claim that you abused them. Yeah. Are you saying everybody in that documentary was not telling the truth about you? Everybody?
If you really look at that documentary, which I'm sure you have.
I have.
Everybody said something bad about me. Nobody said nothing good. They was describing Lucifer. I'm not Lucifer. I'm a man. I make mistakes, but I'm not a devil, and by no means am I a monster.
I'm going to name the...
Okay, so let's pause that there, and one of the things that I noticed is that his body language is very over-exaggerated. I mean, anytime you have an over-exaggerated body language, you tend to have what could be considered deception. Now, he's very good at... and maybe shaking his head no, but one of the key phrases that he says, and by the way, I'm trained to identify certain words in context that perceive deception, and one of them was absolutely not. So he used the words absolutely, and anytime you're using that, it's a convincing term. So he kind of is trying to make it sound like absolutely I've never done anything. Like it's a very sure thing and indefinite. And but I'm a little concerned about his body language, his over-accentuated posturing, and he uses his arms a lot and hands, and he's very nervous. And anytime you have something like that, I know he's been through a lot, so that kind of contaminates any results we have today, but I'm not really seeing it, and he's using a lot of keywords and description to him that he feels is very pertinent. But I don't know how you deny a video, and that's kind of where we're like... Yeah, you got a video, dude. So it's not really like you have a case against anything. I don't know what the opposition is, I guess, for him getting let go on some of these charges. But we'll see what he has to say.
Andrea Kelly, your ex-wife, Kitty Jones, Lisa Van Allen, Lizette Martinez, Geronda Pace, Faith Rogers, Asante McGee. You're saying everything they said in that documentary about you is not true.
They are lying on me.
What? So Gayle King says everything they're saying is not true. And rather than shake his head no, it's not true, or in agreement, he shakes his head yes. Now, this can be conflicting when we're looking at body language, especially if the person we're observing, the subject we're observing, is has convinced himself that he believes exactly what it is he says, or his belief on the status of his conviction. So you can get somebody that's highly narcissistic that will no doubtedly believe 100% they didn't do anything wrong, or they did do something that they can't prove. In other words, have you ever seen Big Eyes? It's kind of like that. Big Eyes, the artist, claimed to do all these paintings, never had. It was always his wife, the person he met, and He will take that with him till the day he dies, claiming that he did those paintings, even though he never touched them. There are people that solely believe these things, regardless of the evidence, regardless of any rational thought, because they have convinced themselves that that is what their reality is. And it becomes very strong in a very, you know, powerful mind, I guess. So I know this isn't much to go off of, especially if you can't see it, but we'll just listen to the rest and see what happens next.
Why would these women say the same thing about you, that you are controlling, that you are abusive, that you tell women when to eat, when to go to the bathroom, when they can sleep, where they can dress? Why would all these women tell these different stories about you if they were not true and they don't know each other? That defies logic to me.
Right. Until you hear the explanation. You can start a rumor on a guy like me or a celebrity just like that. All you have to do is push a button on your phone and say, so-and-so did this to me. R. Kelly did this to me. And if you get any traction from that, if you're able to write a book from that, if you're able to get a reality show, then any girl that I had a relationship in the past that it just didn't work out, she can come and say the same exact thing.
Are you blaming this on social media?
I'm talking about the power of social media.
In 2008, R. Kelly was found not guilty on 14 counts of child pornography after prosecutors in Chicago failed to convince a jury that he was a man seen in a sex tape with a girl as young as 13.
What do you want to say to your fans?
Last month, Kelly was indicted again, this time charged with aggravated criminal sexual abuse of four women, including three who the charges say were minors at the time. Have you ever had sex with anyone under the age of 17?
No.
Never?
No.
I have to tell you, it's so hard to believe that based on all that we've read.
I'm going to tell you something, Gail. There's one situation. I'm going to tell you something.
What women said about you.
What women said about me. What women. So nobody's allowed to be mad at me and be scorned and lie on me.
So they're lying on you. That's your explanation. They're lying on you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you can't see it in the video because this is a podcast, but if you watch the clip, this is the most compelling and convincing body language I've seen out of the entire thing so far. He is shaking his head yes, saying that they are lying or that it never happened. So it never happened. Shake your head yes. And what you're actually saying is your body's actually convicting you. Your body is saying, yes, it did happen. I'm saying, no, it didn't happen, but yes, it did. It's kind of like those opposites. And then he goes and says, absolutely, as if he's being very convicted by it, and they make it sound very dramatic. Now, this is a play. This is an act that they have learned to put on over so many years of persecution and everything. Here is another thing, though, another perspective. I've been working on a way to kind of research and describe social media sacrifice phenomenon. What that means is they find somebody that will help them improve, you know, like he said, write a book, improve their social media status, make better ratings, get promoted, that kind of thing. And what I'm trying to do is determine if this is actually happening, if it's an actual thing. And you see it with the Scott Peterson case. You've seen it with Stephen Avery, where they find somebody that they can use as sort of leverage for their own personal gain. There's a whole economy around it. If one person goes down, then someone gets promoted, and then someone writes a book, and then someone gets content, and it increases ratings. Because, you know, there's no other evidence otherwise, but if you can be hung by the public. So that's something I am trying to find out. But however, even though he mentions this, because it is a viable argument, because this is a real concept. The social media sacrifice phenomenon is a real concept that happens out there in the real world. However, he is guilty of what he's done, and he's not being, maybe he wasn't found guilty, but he's being highly deceptive. Even though the evidence was not convincing enough to push for him, the issue that means is that they just weren't able to gather enough evidence convincing enough to prosecute him or to find him guilty. That's all that means. It doesn't mean he did or did not do the act. We're not trying to prove his innocence. However, he could feel guilty for doing something even if he never did anything wrong. But in this case, there is definite signs that he is guilty of what he is being accused of.
Absolutely.
You feel that people have maligned your character?
I have been assassinated. I have been buried alive. But I'm alive.
So I think the point you're making is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you have never held anybody against their will.
I don't need to. Why would I?
Well, I'm
how stupid would it be for R. Kelly
with all I've been through in my way, way past, to hold somebody, let alone 4, 5, 6, 50, you said. Why, how stupid would I be to do that?
I didn't say you
were
holding.
That's stupid, guys.
I didn't.
Is this camera on me?
Yes, it's on.
That's stupid. Use your common sense. Don't forget the blogs. Forget how you feel about me. Hate me if you want to. Love me if you want. But just use your common sense. How stupid would it be for me to, with my crazy past and what I've been through, oh, right now I just think I need to be a monster and hold girls against their will, chain them up in my basement, and don't let them eat and don't let them out unless they need some shoes down the street from their uncle. Robert, stop it. Y'all quit playing. Quit playing. Robert. I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. I'm fighting for my life.
Whoa, now it gets real. Okay, so hold on a second. He is inwardly pushing on his chest saying, I did not do this. When you do that, that's actually, in body language, a sign you did. You're internally, projecting? Internally self-condemning or something? I can't remember the term that I'm trying to think of here. But you are saying that you did it. And then not only that, you gave a description of what you did. You held him down in the basement, and you didn't let him go down to the street. Now, I know that was said to you, so he could be repeating it. Again, we're just looking for deception. We're not actually trying to figure out what did or did not happen. However, analyzing it, I would be confident enough to say that it's highly deceptive, that there is a chance this is going to happen or did happen. And not only that, we get more of a confession coming up here. I understand the stress, but let's hear what happens next. Listen intently. It's very dark and serious, and I'm sorry. If you're having anyone else in the room that doesn't want to hear this kind of thing, please turn it off. Put it in headphones or something like that. I can't believe they kind of put this on CBS, but, you know, it's the news. They do what they want for ratings and all that stuff, and so do I, because that's how the world works. Got to make money, right? All right, so we're going to listen to the rest of the R. Kelly thing. I know I keep saying the rest. I guess I mean, like, we're going to listen to the next segment until I got something else to say. Here we go.
Y'all killing me with this. I gave y'all 30 years of my career.
Robert.
30 years of my career. Y'all trying to kill me. You killing me, man. This is not about music. I'm trying to have a relationship with my kids. And I can't do it. Y'all just don't want to believe the truth. You don't want to believe it.
At this point, we briefly pause the interview to give Kelly a moment. His publicist helped calm him down.
I hope this camera keep going.
No, we're going to let
the
camera
keep rolling. This is not true. This doesn't even make sense. Why would I hold all these women? Their mothers and fathers told me, we're going to destroy your career.
But Kelly's emotions remained raw.
It's real girls out there missing. It's real young girls out there being abducted, being raped, okay? They really are on chains. They really do have chains on their wrists, and they can't get out.
Robert,
and they're ending up buried in
debt. Robert, we have to have a conversation.
This is
really
not me.
I don't want you just ranting at the camera.
Well, I came here for them to hear me
okay,
talk.
But
I need help.
What kind of help?
This is the kind of help I need.
Yes, what kind of help?
I need somebody to help me not have a big heart, because my heart is so big. People betray me, and I keep forgiving them.
You sound like you're playing the victim here. You sound like R. Kelly, you do. When I listen to you,
I'm just
it does
telling
sound
the
like
truth.
You're playing the victim
I'm
card.
Just telling the truth. And the reason I'm emotional,
but Robert,
and I apologize
have you...
for that,
no,
is
no,
because
no,
this
no.
is the first time I was able to say
speak.
Something.
Yeah.
I've said nothing.
Gail, you remained tough and calm throughout that.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't do any good if we both got hysterical,
yeah.
or if we both got very emotional. And you could see, he felt that, in his mind, everybody's lying. I said, but there's so many people who are telling the same story. And he kept going back. I said, but the women don't know each other. And he said, how do you know they don't know each other? On social media, you're connected. He thinks everybody's trying to do a book deal or they're trying to do a movie. And that really people are conspiring against him.
I have to say, I've never seen anything like that. What was he like before the interview? Because you didn't really know him that well.
No, I don't. He got very emotional several times. I met him maybe beyond 5 years ago at a party where you just say, hi, how are you? You know, it's not the time to say, remember we met 5 years ago? I hate it when people do that. Mm-hmm. So I did ask, can we have a conversation before the interview got started? I wanted to say we're going to give you a platform to say whatever you want to say. It's no secret that he lives at Trump Tower in Chicago. So we went to his apartment there, and we had a conversation. And you walk into his apartment. There's a big welcome home. There's a Christmas tree that he keeps up all year long since his mother died back in 1993. He's very close to his mother, misses her very much because it was her favorite holiday. Mm-hmm. So he keeps a Christmas tree up all year long. It was like 90 degrees in there because he was resting his voice. He said he was going to be singing later.
But what he is accused of is dastardly.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think what you did, Gail, was allow him to tell his story and to see, though, his behavior, his temperament, is I think what is probably what is most revealing of this interview as well. The pounding of the fist, the getting up. I was worried about you. I was actually worried about you when I saw the pictures.
Well, it's funny. Favorite son, favorite daughter, and Oprah all called me and said, were you afraid? Did you think he was going to hit you? I actually never thought that. I think that he was, I thought I might get accidentally clobbered, but I didn't think that he would deliberately try to hurt me. I never felt in danger talking to him. I just felt that he had a lot of emotion. He wanted to release it. And, you know, when it was all over, we had a conversation, we said goodbye, and I think at the end of the day, he was glad that he was able to say what he wanted to say.
Okay.
Even if, but it's hard to believe when you say, Robert, there are so many allegations and so many accusations, and you've never had sex with anybody under the age of 17.
And it took this jury less than a day to deliberate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Exactly right.
There's more coming, right?
And he says more will come.
Okay, so that's the end of the clip. That was the entire thing from CBS. R. Kelly breaks the silence on sex abuse claims. I'm fighting for my fucking life. And this was on CBS this morning, March 6th. Oh, today. Holy crap, it was today. Anyways, so R. Kelly at the end there got very intense and very excited. And this is what's known as a tantrum. If you're someone who's innocent, you're typically not going to throw a tantrum. But you know what? He's had so many years of this. So I could see being very upset, and you should be. That's a normal reaction. In some cases, he's behaving normally. In other cases, he's showing that he doesn't have some maturity in some areas. So look up the book, The Myth of Mental Illness by Thomas Szasz. This book kind of describes some things that kind of make it very interesting. Another one is, Ron Johnson, the psychopath test. He talks about the man in the striped suit. And what it is that somebody pretended to be crazy or you know, had mental illnesses or whatever. And once he was in, because he was completely sane, he had to then prove he was not. And that was actually harder to do, to prove you're not insane, than to prove you are sane. So Even though this act of, hey, look, I look great, I'm in a pinstripe suit, I'm sane. But you're here in the mental asylum because you are insane, right? So that is kind of a very interesting book. And then if you look at the myth of mental illness, there's so many things that kind of go into philosophy and other things that it doesn't really look like mental illness. If you look at it from a certain perspective, in other words, we have a way we believe we're supposed to live. However, that doesn't mean we have to live this way and everyone else has to follow the same suit. It could easily be you can defend. I mean, that's why we say you can defend your way of living. You know, it doesn't mean it's always going to work out or that's right, but everyone has the right to defend it. If you want to be a killer, you can be a killer. Doesn't mean it's going to work out the best way. It's not positive. However, forcing your will onto others is morally wrong, and everybody can agree with that. So we don't push our agenda onto other people. We simply give them insight into our lives, and they can adopt it and build on it if they choose to. So what R. Kelly is struggling with, and what he says is what I am working on, is the social media sacrifice phenomena. And I don't have any other terms for it or anything better, but basically it's like I call it a sacrifice because like they put someone up for sacrifice so that they can have a better career, a better life, more money, the books, the movies, the TV shows, etc., and social media, you know, gains and all that crap. So that's what I call a social media sacrifice, or I guess I should say a media sacrifice. Anybody in the media that is willing to sacrifice a person and ruin and destroy their life for their own gain. And this happens because there needs to be more discernment of details and what's going on, and they don't care about that. They care about the ratings. Tell me, I mean, if they weren't getting paid $29 million a year or 25 or whatever it is, what's their motivation? I mean, shit, if I'm getting paid $25 million, I will do whatever I'm told. Anything. Almost anything. You know, as long as it's not, like, incriminating or anything. But I would, because I'm getting paid $25 million to have a great life. I mean, shoot, who wouldn't? So there's no motivation to actually do well in your career or to be honest or anything. It's about the ratings. If you don't get these ratings, you don't get paid, period. So that's kind of what I think R. Kelly is trying to say is happening, is that there's this media or social media phenomena where he's being basically sacrificed on an altar or on a platform, you know, because he's on a social media musical platform, you know, popularity and all that. And he feels that everyone's coming after him. Now, this is common for famous people. And when you have popularity, there's a lot of people that can come after you. And I think that's kind of what's happening here. However, once again, we do have video evidence of him doing these things to underage people. And, you know, it's really hard to say that he's innocent because he's not. But even though the court found him innocent, it doesn't mean that he is. And even though he's putting on a good show and everything's nice, it doesn't mean he never wanted to have a good life. He has something, a fetish or a chemical response system to certain stimuli that happens to involve younger children. This is not okay. Regardless of, you know, the biological things and that we consider is okay for LGBTQ and et cetera, and for straight and homo, you know, heterosexual, the difference is these are unconsenting minors. They're not rational. They're not reasonable. Well, I mean, they can be. They're just not at the age of, like, reason or thinking about their future life and all that stuff. They're very in the moment, still very reactionary to what's going on right there and then and how their emotions are and how they feel. They don't think about the consequences long term until that usually happens when your prefrontal lobe fully matures around the age of 25. That's when you start considering that what you're doing now could affect your future. Now, I think what will be interesting is another episode that I'll do on this where we hear more from the victims and the families of those victims and see what they have to say. And we can examine their body language as well. It's really hard to do on a podcast, so I apologize, but I'm trying to do my best at least explaining what I'm looking at and what I'm seeing as I see it. Now, there was a thing at the end of that interview that they asked Gail if she was afraid that she was ever going to get punched or hurt, and they said they were fearful for her. Now, because of those kind of statements, that paints a picture for the audience. And what it does is go, oh, yeah, was he going to hurt you? Like, he could. And no, none of that was actually going to happen. I didn't even think that. But because it was said in a media forum on a show, it made me think about it. But I didn't actually think that he was going to do anything. He was being overly expressive, accentuating body language to try to get his point across. Now, this is also known as a fear tactic, like a bear does. Stands up on the right rear hind legs and goes, "Rawr," to try to scare their assailant. To try to scare people away. Like, you know, it's like Shrek in the movie Shrek. Where he's like, "I'm an ogre," rah! And then he gets kind of made fun of and by the donkey. And yeah, so that's all R. Kelly was doing. He's putting on a show, "Stop coming after me," and he's hitting his fist. And he's going, "Hey, you know, I'm big and strong and like, rah, like I'm a monster." Like, but he goes, "But then they're calling me a monster." So you kind of hear these things and you have to realize he's putting on a show. That's the theatrics. That's the over-accentuating body language. He's putting on a show. "I didn't do these things. Look at the show I'm putting on. Look how emotional I am about it. I couldn't have done it." You're throwing a fucking temper tantrum, R. Kelly. And that's why people believe you fucking did it. Anyways, sorry. I lost it there. "I never swore," as I shake my head up and down. So anyways, that's kind of the interview. I thought this was very interesting, and wow, boy, just explosive. And I don't see this too many times out of the people that are accused of doing something. I mean, I can understand being a little upset, and I can understand this affecting your life for such a long time. But if the video is the video, and I mean, granted, if there's no, if you can't really prove anything beyond a doubt, I guess, you know, you can't really prosecute for it because you failed to find him guilty for doing these things. But you haven't proven his innocence either. You just proven it wasn't enough to convict him of guilt. So that is the show for today. Thank you for listening. If you have any comments, concerns, or want to voice your opinion, please follow me on Facebook at the Adam Paradox Podcast, or on Twitter, One Adam Paradox, or on anchor.fm, where you can show your support and give a monthly donation, or just listen to my monetizations and my ads from Flipboard and Anchor. Those also help pay the bills. Well, maybe a cup of coffee, you know, for now. But hey, the more you listen, the more you share, the greater this podcast will grow. I'm going to be getting some guests on the show eventually here. I'm working it out and the details, trying to get connected with everybody on a time that works. Other than that, that is the show today. I wish I had more updates or something cooler to say at the end. Just be